What's up, everyone? This is Mason along with Dan, and we just got done recording a really great episode with someone that is doing it all, that is in the healthcare space, owns their own business, and is a real estate investing group guru. Tons of flips, tons of rentals. But Dan, how are you doing today?
Mason, I'm great. I'm just wondering how this guy gets everything done. My goodness, this is the work of three people when I read his bio.
Oh, yeah. No, it is intense. And I have had the pleasure of knowing Dr. Daniel Murray for several years now, and some of the stories that he spoke about when he first got started in the much more recent active flipping days, I walked some of those flips with him. But Daniel Murray, he graduated from Parker University in August of 2016. During his time at Parker, he was involved in tons of different activities, which shows how he's able to manage everything he's doing today. A month after graduation, Dr. Murray opened up his own clinic, Vanguard Chiropractic, in San Antonio, where he helps everyone from newborns to professional athletes and ex-NFL players, as well as being a published author, where his book, Keeping Health Simple, can be purchased on Amazon. At this point, Daniel owns 48 doors and is growing that portfolio, which you'll get to hear more about during this episode, and is closing in on 30 houses that he has flipped. He's the father to three wonderful children. And in addition to owning his clinic and building his real estate portfolio to over 100 doors, he attributes his success to using his clinic to build people, not people to build his clinic. So Daniel is definitely someone that loves to give and loves to help newbies as well as more experienced investors in their journey, and a great person to partner with. And we hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Big Picture Blueprint. I'm your host, Dan Abercost, along with Mason McDonald. And we're going to discuss all things land, real estate, and business in general with all kinds of exceptional people. Let's get started.
Dr. Daniel Murray, my friend, how are you doing today?
Good morning. I am fantastic. I really appreciate you guys inviting me to join you today.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be fantastic. We've known each other for a little while. I remember walking through a flip of yours back in San Antonio when we lived there together back in my Texan days. Yep. But to just start it off, and we'll hear more about your story. Trust, I think, is one of the most important aspects of business, especially whenever you are in real estate where there's a lot of money moving around and complex emotional deals, but also in healthcare where you are taking people's lives in their hands. How do you develop enough trust with a client that will allow them to, or allow you to do an adjustment on their newborn baby?
Well, it's pretty simple in the clinic and everywhere in business and in life. I try to treat everyone the same way that I would treat my family. I picture my mom or my kids and just try to treat them exactly the same way. And I think that comes across to the patients or the people that I'm doing business with. You know, people are smart. They can tell if you're a genuine person, if you genuinely care about them. And that's really what people want to know, especially in the healthcare space. There's just a few important questions. Does the doctor care about me? Can they help me? And of course, how much is this going to cost me? So, you know, we just try to treat everyone with the utmost respect, the golden rule, if you will. I don't like waiting around in doctor's offices. So we work really diligently to make sure that we're efficient, kind, courteous. If someone asks for paperwork, we try to get it to them that day, if not the same shift.
I think that's a really fantastic thing, that if you are a decent person and you show yourself and you're transparent with the world and try to do things the right way, which a lot of the times is, it's not as complicated as people make it out to be. But Daniel, for people that don't know you or haven't heard you on another show or has seen your content, could you give us an introduction of who you are, from how you got from a Sigma Chi fraternity brother in college to the owner of a clinic and real estate investor that you are today?
Sure. My name is Daniel Murray. I'm originally from Dallas, Texas, and I'm now in San Antonio. I moved down here to be closer to my children, and really fell in love with South and Central Texas. So my story is I started off as a special education teacher, and I started teaching in 2003, and I flipped my first house in 2003. So I had a good buddy in high school whose dad did a lot of owner financing. He would purchase properties in the DFW area. This was He started back in the 1980s, so he was picking up houses in Mesquite and Garland for $20,000, doing the work himself. He was a handyman. I went and walked some of the properties. I wouldn't say that he was the best general contractor, but he got the job done. I remember walking one of his properties, and he had the HVAC unit just literally sitting in the garage and just ran all the duct work. I mean, literally in the middle of the garage. It was the weirdest thing. But he was, despite his lack of perfectionist GC skills, he accumulated over 50 doors, and he was buying them for $20,000. He was owner financing for $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, and just carrying the notes. He was all cash. I mean, as you could imagine, running those numbers in your head, he just had this huge amount of cash flow coming in. And I was fortunate enough to meet Jimbo when I was a sophomore in high school, 16 years old. And I showed a lot of interest in what he was doing. And he would take me into his office and show me his books, show me his operations, explain everything that he did. And so by the time I was driving a car, I knew that I wanted to get involved in real estate. And I actually made my first off-market offer while I was in high school. Back then, I mean, you're talking 1995, 96, there was no YouTube. The internet was just barely being born. So back then you had to, comb through the records and the county records and then the phone book. And I tracked down the owner of this vacant house and went and knocked on their door. I was 17 or 18 years old, and they got a kick out of it. They didn't want to sell it. They held on to it and eventually fixed it up. But I wasn't successful in my first deal. So I think that's good to put out there that, you know, you're rarely going to be successful in your first deal. It's been my experience. A lot of people that I know and associate with, you don't always hit a home run your first time up at bat. So Jimbo got me interested in real estate. I was teaching, finally had some capital to buy my first flip. I did three flips in Dallas. Then I moved down to San Antonio to be close to my kids. Still teaching at that time in 2006. So basically I did a flip in 2003, 2004, 2005 in Dallas. And I was making like $5,000 a flip, which I thought I had hit the lottery, man. That was, you know, I being a special education teacher back then, I think I was making $42,000 a year. So I just brought home an additional 10% in income, which was huge for me at that time. And so I moved to San Antonio in 2006. I picked up a property in 06, 07, and 08. And of course, you know what happened in 2008. The bottom fell out of the market. And I thought that I was ruined. I thought this is game over. And at that time, I was playing in the sub 100 market. So picking up houses for $50,000, $60,000. One of them I even bought for $38,000. This is in Converse, a little sub-city outside of San Antonio. Well, what happened is the sub-100 market crashed really, really hard, and the banks would not lend to anyone in that space. And so the rental rates went through the roof. So these houses that I was picking up for $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 were now suddenly renting out for $1,200 a month. So the cash flow was enough to where I was able to go back to graduate school, got my DC, lived off the cash flow while I was in grad school, so I didn't have to work a second job, a part-time job or anything. Focused on school, got my degree, came out, spent about 2 years from 2016 to 2018 just really focusing on the chiropractic clinic. As you guys know, building a business from the ground up is no easy task. But at the end of 2018, the referrals were coming in on a regular basis. I didn't have to spend so much time before or after clinic doing networking, marketing, screenings, things of that nature. And I had a little cash. I think I had between $10,000 and $20,000. So first thing, I call my fraternity brother, Ron Henry, who's also a Theta Tau Sigma Chi from Texas State there. And he had been a realtor for a number of years at this point. And I said, hey, Ron, I've got a small wad of cash. I'd like to flip a house. So he put his ear to the ground and came up with a really great deal. I ended up, I think, making $15,000, which, you know, not a grand slam by any means, but again, I think I might have had 15 into it. I pulled 30,000 out, so that's 100% return, and it was a quick one. It was all cosmetic stuff. I think I ended up replacing the roof, but I think it was less than a 6-month process. So now APY, you're actually looking at a 200% return. So 2019, I really hit the ground running. I think I did 7 or 8 flips that year. I started looking for some small multifamily. I was looking for a duplex. I ended up buying an Aplex instead because, I picked it up for $275 on the south side of San Antonio. It cash flowed almost immediately. Ended up putting in less than $100,000, sold it for $550 a couple years later, rolled that money into a luxury Airbnb on the San Marcos River. So going back to my roots at Texas State, having fun in San Marcos, making money. And long story short, in that time, I accumulated from 2018 until today, currently 48 doors, but I have another 33 under contract that should be closing in the next 30 days or so. So I'll be closing in on 80 doors by the end of this month, early next month. So there's some interesting things to unpack. I've switched more towards small and mid-sized multifamily for tax purposes. I've done the gamut, not everything in real estate. It's almost endless, all the things you can do, but I have fiddled with quite a few of the different areas, from flips and now to short-term rentals.
Daniel, that is quite the story, and there's a lot to unpack there. So if I'm understanding you correctly, those first few flips, along with your job as an educator, is where you got the capital to then go and buy a few rentals, and then those rental properties carried you through medical school to become a chiropractor. And then, of course, that greatly increased your income, where then you've been able to pretty quickly here scale. I know there's several points I want to pull out of that, but one of the main ones is just the value of early on making a few intentional investments, and how much a few good properties bought early on can carry you in the future. You know, personally, the first couple properties I bought allowed me to leave my job pretty early and go and start my active business, and allowed me to fail for a while, but they kept me afloat. And it's a similar sort of thing there. You didn't have to work while you're getting your degree. And so there's several other things I want to hit on, but that was one important one I thought the audience should really have emphasized. But fast forwarding to today, you're picking up doors quite rapidly. You mentioned 30 some doors under contract. There's a lot of things I want to hit on here. So let's bookmark the tax strategy and come back to that. But one thing that comes to mind for me when someone talks about picking up a lot of doors is the quality and area that they're buying in. And so how do you balance, of course, growing the portfolio, but buying rentals that aren't a huge pain in the butt? And I'd be curious, I don't know, Texas. I'm from near Cleveland, and I think about so many of the properties there, 100 years old. You can buy them quite cheaply, but they're in a horrible area. And so what do these buildings look like, and how do you think about scaling in a sustainable way where it doesn't create a huge headache for you?
Sure. Oh, great questions. So I target areas that I like to live in and where I work. So the majorities of the properties that I own in and around San Antonio are north of downtown, and probably some, there's a lot of really cool old historic neighborhoods just north of downtown, and actually all around downtown San Antonio. But I tend to stay north because that's my flight path. My kids live with their mom on the northeast side. That's why I started off in Converse when I came down here. It's just the area that I knew. And then I started noticing all the fun things tend to happen close to downtown. You've got Tobin Hill, Monta Vista, Alta Vista. And then I started off with my first clinic in Castle Hills. I was renting a building, and then I ended up buying in Medical Center off of Fredericksburg Road. So the 22-unit apartment that I have under contract right now is on Fredericksburg, literally between my house and my clinic, almost equidistant. So I'm familiar with these areas. They're where I would be comfortable living. I would be comfortable sending my contracting crew. You know, I don't go too far east. I don't go too far west. I've had some people send me some screaming deals, but my response once I do a Google walk through the neighborhood is, you know, even if you gave it to me, I probably wouldn't take it because I just don't feel safe in those areas, and I don't want to put my team in harm's way over a dollar. So again, it goes back to what we talked about in the beginning. You treat people the way you would want to be treated. I would not want my construction crew or anybody that I work with to go into these really, really bad D-class areas. Now, that being said, there's always an exception to the rule. I do like the south side of San Antonio, you know, King William, Southtown, Riverside. I've done a lot of business in Riverside. The people down there are wonderful. They've always welcomed me with open arms. I've got some good friends that I met down there. And so my flight path is typically from the north side of downtown upwards and outwards. But again, there are some exceptions. There's some pockets on the south side of San Antonio with really cool properties, really great people, great neighborhoods. And as far as the scope of work, you know, you mentioned that we've got this amazing history of San Antonio. I mean, I haven't purchased a building built in the 1800s yet, but I've walked a few. I've come close. And honestly, I looked at one on South Florida, as I'm still kicking myself for not buying that one. It was an amazing deal. Just it was a little too big for me. So I started off buying these houses in Dallas and that were built in the 60s, pier and beam, just little stick frame houses. And back then I was doing all the work myself on the summers and weekends and times that I wasn't teaching. So I got to crawl under and learn how to do foundation work myself. I got to do plumbing, electrical. I'm not saying that's the right thing to do. In fact, I made a lot of mistakes and probably lost money in the long run by doing it myself. And, you know, my first couple of flips would take me a year because I was working a full-time job, raising a family, and trying to do this on the side. So it's not that I'm recommending it at all. And if you're familiar with Mark Ferguson, and if you've ever read any of his books, he did the exact same thing. And I think that's a mistake a lot of newbie investors make. But the other side to that coin is you do learn from your mistakes, and you also learn how to do things the wrong way. And so, although I wouldn't consider myself a fantastic general contractor, I do know enough to realize when something's not being done the right way. And so now that I'm moving out of holding the hammer and swinging the hammer myself and into project management, when I walk a property, I know what I'm looking for. So in that regard, it was a benefit to my experience as an investor. So to answer your question, how do I avoid, you know, properties that are going to be money holes? Well, I've just had a lot of time, you know, inside, underneath, on top of properties. So I have a pretty good ability to go in, look at the condition of the property, or even pictures. I've even bought a few properties sight unseen. Once you're around this stuff long enough, you'll be able to recognize what the scope of work, what the rehab is going to entail for the most part. Now there's always a hidden surprise. You know, I tell everybody, expect the unexpected in real estate. I don't think I've ever been through a project where everything has gone perfectly right. There's always going to be some sort of hiccup. So that's why, you know, I recommend at least a 10% contingency. So if you think your rehab's going to be 50, well, it's probably going to be 55 or 60. So have some contingency money put aside. And I, you know, when I first started off, and Mark Ferguson's been a big influence for me in the real estate realm. One of his books, he talked about when you first start off, you really want to avoid doing big structural changes. You want to avoid doing monster rehabs. You know, if this is your first flip or your first value add property, try to find something that just needs cosmetics. Don't go in there and tackle an addition or a complete down to the studs 1910 historic home on your first flip, because you might get yourself in trouble really fast. And the other thing I'll say is quite a few of the properties that I pick up now are from other investors that have just taken on too large of projects. But I'm 21 years into it, getting close to 30 flips, and a lot of experience has led me to be able to take on these bigger projects, older historic homes. But I definitely would not recommend that as a starting place for a newer investor.
Yeah. So two comments, and then I'll pass the mic to Mason. I really want to emphasize your point about having done the work yourself and having a pretty thorough understanding of construction, because you would not be able to vet and manage and be the project manager properly if you didn't understand what goes into that. You know, you have to understand the process. So I think it is important that you've gone through it, or you have a partner that's gone through it that's handling, you know, that management before stepping away from doing it yourself. And that applies just about to everything. And then number two, I liked your simple rule right off the bat regarding area of only places that you would be comfortable living. I think that's a great simple heuristic. You know, for me, I want buildings younger than me where I can get tenants with 700 plus credit scores, you know, and that works for me. Great points there, but Mason, I'll pass it to you.
Yeah. And Daniel, I think you gave so much tangible advice there, both for the building of a rental portfolio as well as building a home flipping business. And I guarantee you your spread on deals, you know, and while inflation has changed the value of the dollar, but you're not looking at a flip for a $5,000. You want your contingency to be is probably greater than $5,000 on those flips. So let's walk through, while we're on this tangible and very practical advice for the home flipper person that's building their investment portfolio with a flip, what does your team look like? Is it in-house? Is it all contracted and subcontracted? And then two, walk me through the numbers of, let's say, your most recent, you know, and show off, you know, your most recent really good flip that you did. Do you hear about the deals that Dan and I are doing and feel like you lack the capital or knowledge to do them yourself? Allow us to be your partners in this and visit gupland.com to learn more about how we can provide you with all the capital to complete land transactions, as well as the expertise and guidance for you to create your own business. Visit us at gupland.com.
Sure, sure. So my team right now, I have a project manager who handles all the short-term rentals. She lives part-time in the U.S. and part-time in Mexico. She's actually, this is kind of a sidebar, but I have to brag on Susie. She's completed renovations on her own investment property in Mexico, and she's about to rent it out. And one of the goals for my company, part of our mission, is to create investors out of our employees. So two out of the three full-time employees on my team now have their own investment properties, and they're doing really well. And I'm excited to see them be successful also. So I have three full-time employees on the construction side, a project manager, Susie, who handles all the logistics of the short-term rentals. We're up to, I believe, 17 short-term rental units. So as you can imagine, that's a full-time job right there, answering all the messages, talking with the cleaners, all the logistics that go into running the labor-heavy short-term rental operation. And she's also very much a big part of the project management of the flips. So as I've scaled my portfolio and started to work with partners and gone into multifamily, I try to focus more on what needed at and good at and enjoy, which is investor relations, deal acquisition, and analysis. So I've got Susie, Gabrielle, and Gerardo. Gabrielle and Gerardo are my two full-time construction employees. You know, they handle a lot of the day-to-day operations. We have a group on WhatsApp where pictures are uploaded constantly throughout the day when I'm at lunch or before or after clinic hours. I'm looking at what's going on. I'm just overseeing. I hop in if I need to make a comment. But for the most part, they are running the company and doing what they need to do. We're pretty repetitive with a lot of things. We're going to use the same agreeable gray on the walls, white trim. Now, sometimes we'll have some fun and on certain projects and go out of the ordinary. But for the most part, it's gotten to a point where it's fairly repetitive as far as the materials and style and color schemes and things of that nature. So two full-time guys, we're able to knock out flips, but also, you know, keep up with the Airbnbs. People are constantly breaking things. So we do a lot of repairs. We've got quite a few long-term units now. So again, my guys act as the general handyman for all the properties. On the majors, we work with professionals that are licensed in their field. So we always subcontract the HVAC, the plumbing, the electrical, roofing. If it's a pier and beam, we might do some foundation work ourselves, but we tend to hire that out as well. I am a licensed contractor in San Antonio. So in 2019, it got to the point where I realized if I'm going to do this as a business, I'd like to go ahead and be able to be in full control of the permitting process instead of relying on other people. You know, contractors are famous for not pulling the permits that they're supposed to and then getting in trouble with the city. So I went ahead and took that step very early on to get my GC license. And that's been really good just to make sure that I'm doing everything the right way. So yeah, we've got our own in-house team. We sub out all the majors to the licensed professionals, and it's been working great. The team expands and contracts. We picked up a 14 unit last March, and at one point we had 7 guys working with us full time for about 6 months because we're, you know, as we pick up these multifamilies, we're still doing flips. We still have the existing portfolio. And so right now we're looking for 2 or 3 more full-time employees because we will, you know, once we close on these, we have a 22 unit and an 11 unit under contract. We're going to need some help. So we're looking to hire a couple more full-time employees, but we can also subcontract out as well. And I'm not against that. So that's what the team looks like currently. But again, based on the projects that we're doing, the size of the team may expand.
That's awesome. And I think that is a lot of what you said right there is both, it's complex in the sense that you, as you start doing more deals and figuring out what you're good at and what you enjoy, like you do want to step back and allow your team to take care of things. But being able to have that licensure and have the experience to get involved, it makes it feel like you have that greater degree of control because life happens and things happen. So you're really able to just dive into the business and do what needs to be done and have control over it. But let's zoom in before we zoom back out again of the most recent flip, the 60-second version of where'd you get it from? How much did you pay for it? How much did you put into it? How much did you sell it for? And what did the total profit look like?
Sure. I'm actually closing on one today, selling it, closing this afternoon. So I spent a lot of time networking back in 2018, 2019. I started taking out every realtor that I know to lunch or dinner or drinks, like, hey, I just want to meet you. I want to talk about what I'm doing and just let them know that I'm looking for those dilapidated properties that they run across that they can't sell on the open market. So offering them a solution to problems that they come across on a regular basis. So this most recent flip is in Elodies, Texas, which is a sub-city of San Antonio, really nice area. A realtor friend of mine called me and said, hey, I've got this client that has a house that's in really rough shape. I think they owe $300. The ARB was $575. And so I think we came in somewhere around $325, but we gave, like, we paid for movers, did a few things. I think we gave some cash out of pocket to pay the client's first month rent at their new place, just, you know, trying to help them out, give them some cash to get settled in their new space. It was a divorce situation. The husband had just left the wife with a really tough situation. The house was completely trashed. Now, it was all cosmetic stuff. When I say trashed, I mean literally just trash everywhere, kind of a hoarder situation. The guy just left the lady. And so, again, she was in a rough place emotionally, mentally. So created a solution. We hired some movers to get the stuff that she wanted to keep. We got her in a nice apartment, got her some cash to get her life started over with. And then, you know, we started cleaning it out 5 dumpsters later, whatever it was. And I'm talking 40 yarder. So, you know, 200 yards of trash later, we uncover a really beautiful, I believe it's a 5-bedroom, 3.5-bath home in Elodies. And we got it under contract in the first 5 days, I think. We had a full price offer and came back an inspection that it needed a new roof. So we did have to come down with quite a few concessions. I think we have something like $50,000-$75,000 into it. So let's say our all-in is 400. I think the sales price came down close to 550 after concessions. So it'll be a six-figure flip when it's all said and done with. So definitely a home run. Those don't come around too often. When we got lucky on this one, there was a previous inspection, and the inspector said that there was a plumbing leak or several plumbing leaks in the slab. And so we budgeted for that in our offer. And I had my plumber, Glenn Pulliam with Pulliam Plumbing, came out, ran a static test and didn't find any leaks in the slab. So, you know, we probably saved $20,000-$30,000 just right there. And, you know, that was a really nice surprise. Of course, the roof kind of counterbalanced that, because I had a roofer come out and make some repairs. He didn't think that it needed to be completely replaced, but when the inspection came back, it turns out that it probably did need to be replaced. So had a couple different roofers come out, and they all agreed, yeah, this is a full replacement. So like I say, there's always going to be something that's unexpected. We got lucky that we didn't have to do the plumbing. But as you can see, our margins were wide enough where even if we had to do the plumbing and the roof had been an issue, we still would have come out ahead. So you really have to get in at the right price, because you don't know which way these things are going to fall. Even with my experience, you know, I miss the fact that the roof needed to be replaced.
Absolutely. So, yeah. I mean, congrats on that. That's a great deal. And one of closing in on 30 flips, where if you have deals that are like that happen 20 or 30 times, it's okay whenever you have the ones that are more complex. And I think a couple things that I want to pull out of that before I pass it back to Dan is the network is where you get these deals. The amount of deals that get sent to myself, Dan, and you, Daniel, every day in my inbox that I pass because I don't need them and don't want them, that are still probably pretty good, is because of the network that I've created and that we've all created. So go out there and network and talk to people and be clear with the criteria. Don't say, you know, I'm interested in doing a sub-2 deal and a wholesale and a fix and flip on a small multifamily and adding an ADU. Say, this is what I'm looking for, especially if you're just getting started at the beginning of this. And then another thing is within the contingency budget, whenever you have enough room in the deal, because you've been saying no to all the wrong ones and yes to the right ones, it happens. There's that oops factor that can be anywhere from 10 to 20%, which is why, unless you're good at flipping homes or have a partner that's really good at flipping homes, I personally would stay away from it if there's a $20,000 margin, if everything goes right, because all it takes is the roof or the central line or some big foundational issue or something like that, that will not just make it a small profit deal, but a loss. And then lastly on it is, with everything, you know, you miss the roof, who cares? There was enough room in the deal. But that's one nice thing about concessions and working about it with a potential buyer in the right way, where that happened to me on a closing I had yesterday. Of there was a survey issue with a property that I sold where the lot lines didn't match what the legal description was, and it was going to cost about $5,000 and 30 to 60 days to fix. And what we did with the buyer is, let's just close tomorrow. You guys will reduce the purchase price by $5,000. It was a cash deal and it works. So it happens. And being able to negotiate on the back end and recognizing you guys didn't actually have to replace the roof. I didn't have to fix all the legal description stuff. Just something to remember about concessions at the end of a transaction. But Dan, I want to pass it back to you as we start moving towards the last 10 minutes or so of the show to start getting into some of the tax implications and strategies that we work on.
You mentioned specifically, Daniel, that you shifted more into the small and medium multifamily for tax reasons. Can you speak to that a bit? And one part of that I'd love to hear is, you're not able to claim real estate professional status, correct? Because you're a full-time practicing doctor, or are you able to claim that as well?
So I'm only in my clinic physically 24 hours out of the week. So I haven't yet, but this has been a topic of discussion with my CPA and a lot of the guys that I do business with and that have been in the game longer than I have are saying, look, every time I talk to you, it's about real estate. You're always working, you know, before or after clinic hours on the weekend. So I really just need to sit down and document my hours at this point, because I'm quite sure I'm doing more than 24 hours a week on the real estate side, because it pretty much is every day I'm spending at least a few hours on it. So I haven't claimed rep status yet, but that is something that's in the near future. I'm also looking at cutting down my clinic hours, hiring another associate so that I can maybe chop it down to 18 hours or so. And that way there won't be any question whatsoever that I'm doing real full time and claim that rep status. So we're getting into cost segregation studies, and that's where the small and mid-sized multifamily strategies coming into play. I thought I was a unicorn in being the only chiropractor that did a bunch of real estate, but ironically, I went to a chiropractic seminar and met a bunch of guys from the Northeast, Scott Garber, Bill Deccan, Judd O'Grady, all these gentlemen from New Jersey, Rhode Island, New York, and found that there was a group of guys that have been doing it for quite a long time. And when I described, you know, we were just at the bar after the seminar where everyone knows that's where you learn everything that really matters that weekend. And even though I was there for chiropractic, it turned into a real estate discussion. And I started describing my operation to these guys. And back then I was still mostly flipping. And their first question was, well, what did your tax bill look like last year? And I said, well, it was six figures. And they said, yeah, well, how do you feel about that? Obviously not great. And so I got some phone numbers and I started doing some mentoring calls and saw that there was a way to start eating away at my active income. So that's been the pendulum swing for me, going from flipping full time to short term rentals and small multifamily. And now I'm trying to find that happy median where I'm still flipping a few properties a year, generating that cash flow to put back into the business, but also hedging my bets with the multifamily and the cost segregation studies. And I'm happy to report my tax burden was down about 20% last year. And that was for, well, 2022, 2023, it should be about half of that. So instead of $100,000 in taxes, I should be looking at around 50. So that's huge. I mean, that allows me to do one more deal this next year. And I'm also building my portfolio. So it's a double-edged sword in a good way, in that not only am I not paying as much in taxes, but I'm also keeping more of the property. So my portfolio is growing exponentially the past few years since I met Scott and started working with him on doing more of the Burr method, more cash out refis, more multifamily deals. So it's been a good thing. You know, you have to find people that are ahead of you in the game, people that have been there, done that, and are available and open to mentoring and coaching. So I spend a lot of money on coaching, educating myself, seminars, both in the chiropractic and the real estate space. When I got back into it in 2018, I think I discovered Bigger Pockets, and I started on episode one because I wanted to see what all I had missed, you know, because I didn't know this resource existed. So every day on the way to clinic, every day on the way home, I was listening to Bigger Pockets. I was still doing some rehab work myself back then. I still swing a hammer every now and then. So I'm literally rehabbing this house, listening to Bigger Pockets on the weekends. And I did that for a couple years, and at one point I had caught up. I don't know what episode they're on now, but at one point I had caught up and had listened to all the Bigger Pockets episodes. And when I thought about all the hours that I'd put in, not only to Bigger Pockets, but also reading all of Mark Ferguson's books, watching a lot of his YouTube videos, real estate seminars, conversations, podcasts like this, I'm pretty sure I have a master's degree in real estate at this point. So it's not a formal education, but I guess my point is that you know, people ask, well, how do you do it? How did you get here? Well, it's just like everything else. It's putting in the time and the effort, educating yourself, and actually getting in there and getting your hands dirty.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to agree, or there's a bit of nostalgia there. It was 6 years ago right now, I'd bought my first property. And I would go to work and I would come home and I would listen to Bigger Pockets while I was rehabbing that duplex. So I can relate to that. Yeah. Yeah. But a couple other things I wanted to comment on. Absolutely. I did a couple cost segregation studies myself this year. as we're filing my taxes from 2023. And that is powerful. If you haven't looked into real estate professional status and being able to use depreciation against all your income, look into that. And to your other point about documenting, I would be curious. I have another doctor friend I should probably introduce you to, but I'd be curious what a CPA would say. It sounds like you obviously talked to one about how to properly document that. So if you do get audited, you can say without question to the IRS, here is proof that I am doing this X hours a week or whatever the requirement is, because I know some friends that have jobs, but then work at least 48 hours a week in the real estate business, and they don't claim real estate professional status because they're afraid if they get audited, they'd never be able to prove it. So anyways, talk to a CPA, listeners. I am not one. I don't know anything, so don't take advice from me. But all that to say, Daniel, talked about a lot of different topics here. Is there anything we missed that you would like to comment on? Anything else you're doing? Anything at all, really?
The only thing that I'll say is if you're a newbie, don't be afraid to reach out, and people are here to help you. What I've experienced is that there are just a ton of successful people that are willing to reach back and lend a hand, provide guidance. You don't have to go out and pay $50,000 for a coaching program. Not to say that it might not be valuable, it may or may not, but there's a lot of free resources. There's a lot of good people out there. I'd be happy to chat with anyone that is just getting started, because I've had a lot of people that have reached backwards and lent me a hand. So I think it's important as we progress in our portfolios and become more and more successful that we give back to the up and comers and the new guys and gals that are coming up. So if anybody has any questions, I'm on Facebook, Daniel Murray, DC. My company is Flip SA. My chiropractic business is Vanguard Chiropractic. I'd love to be a resource for anyone and anyone that has a question. So just reach out to me via social media or however you can find me, and I'll help if I can.
There we go. And we didn't even have to ask where people can find you. You did it for us because you are an efficient man and just a great person. So if you're in the San Antonio area and you are having health issues that Daniel can solve, his clinic can come help you out. Chiropractic medicine is incredible, and there's so much opportunity within this space to reach out to people like us that are, you know, further along than you, or people that are way further along than us. We enjoy helping people and realize that you can add value, even if it seems like you can't, if you are putting your heart in the right place. So this is Mason McDonald and Dan Habercost with our guest Daniel Murray, signing off. And that's it for today's episode of The Big Picture Blueprint. If you found it helpful, please share it with your friends or anyone you think that it could benefit. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating, and we'll see you in the next episode.